Daniel chapter 6, and we will commence our reading from verse 10. Commence our reading from verse 10. And what we have in verse 10 is Daniel finding out that what he normally does is now illegal. Daniel 6 and verse 10. When Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God. Then they came near and said before the king, concerning the injunction, O king, did you not sign an injunction that anyone who makes petition to any god or man within 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing stands fast according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be revoked. Then they answered and said before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction you have signed, but makes his petition 3 times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was much distressed and set his mind to deliver Daniel. And he labored till the sun went down to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, Now, O king, know, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or ordinance that the king establishes can be changed. Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you. And a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet, and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. We are continuing in the book of Daniel, and we deliberately are keying these messages to the younger section of our church. And although we have reached a point where Daniel is no longer a young man, we are convinced that what brings Daniel to where he is because of convictions that he had from his earlier years. And so this is Daniel in vintage form. This is what he had been all along, but now in his riper years. And it's worth emphasizing, because we often, as young people, admire those that we look up to, who seem to be making their mark in their own generation. And we tend to almost think that it just happened. It was lucky chance. It was something that occurred in the later years of their lives. We rarely realize that this is because of the whole principle of sowing and reaping, continuing into years to come. And that's why this is so important, that although we now have Daniel in his latter years, what we are reading here is something that is a fruit of a life of steadiness, steadfastness, faithfulness to God over the years. And oh, how we pray, especially as church leaders and elders, that this would be true of you, that long after we are gathered with our fathers, Zambia will be affected positively by your standing firm in the things of God. I mentioned the last time that we are in perhaps the most famous chapter in the whole book of Daniel. It's Daniel in the den of lions. And the last time we looked at this, we were seeing how Daniel's faithfulness to his God, the way in which he still maintained his vertical relationship with his God, knowing that this God of mine is a sovereign God, he rules over all, he is a faithful God, he's made promises long before I was born. They are enshrined in his word. This great God will fulfill his promises. My role is to make sure I carry out my responsibility in my day. That kind of Christianity, rather religion that he was in, was one that no doubt brought him trouble, but it also brought him friends. And so we noticed, first of all, those who didn't like him. It was his immediate colleagues. We will see that again today. The ones that he was working with hated him because of his faithfulness in his place of employment. And they wanted to get rid of him using his religion. But similarly, his supervisor, his employer, his ruler, his king, Darius, was one that appreciated him for who he was, primarily because of this. And we saw from there that we must not be surprised, brethren, when our faithfulness to God, seeking to ensure that which is our vertical relationship is maintained and sustained to the glory of God, we should not be surprised that although it bears good fruit on a horizontal level, it will also be the very means that will bring us enmity. We must not be surprised. Now, many of you are on the younger side, and that might sound purely like a sermon to listen to and forget about, but I do want to assure you that in years to come, you will experience something that will cause you to think again about these very words. Today, Daniel arrives in the den of lions. And I deliberately am ending my sermon on verse 18. Deliberately so. Daniel, at this point, is in the den of lions, praying with all his heart that these lions do not suddenly open their mouths and have him for dinner. They haven't done so yet by the time our reading ends. But remember, he's not yet out of the den. And lions are not creatures you get into discussion with and they promise you that since we haven't eaten you yet, we won't eat you. he is still going through a most difficult time in his life. And he's not a young man anymore. I deliberately want to end there for today, primarily because we lose a lot when we quickly, in our study of Scripture, proceed to the good news at the end. We miss a lot. And we miss a lot because life is not often like that in our lives. It's not. It is usually in those moments when life has taken us down into the valley that our faith is tested the most. It is at that time that we often begin to doubt that God is faithful, that God is sovereign. For instance, when a relationship breaks, do you ever begin to say, don't worry. Another guy is coming along. Twice as handsome as that useless chap. God is faithful. God is sovereign. No. It's and so the world has come to an end. But that's the point here. Later on, when all that has been resolved and, you know, you're sort of dressed in white and some stretch limousine is parked out there, you obviously forget all this. That you called God, okay, nice names, but not very nice. You forget that. And yet, it's at a time like this, thrown into a den of lions, that we need to learn the hardest lessons and the best lessons. It is in times such as this that we need to pause. Because, beloved brethren, we will experience being thrown into a den of lions, figuratively speaking. What do we learn from this? Again, it is that God is sovereign and God is faithful. God is sovereign and God is faithful. Let's put it this way. The fact that God is sovereign and God is faithful will not prevent men and women not resting until they get a hand on our lives and seek to destroy us. In fact, such men and women will even go as far as appealing to the law in order to destroy us. Appealing to the law in order to destroy us. And that's what we find here in where we are picking up our narrative in Daniel chapter 6 and verse 15. Daniel chapter 6 and verse 15. Listen to these men. We are told, then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, know, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or ordinance that the king establishes can be changed. Basically, what they were doing is reminding the king to uphold the integrity of the law. The integrity of the law. That you mustn't change anything simply because of one person. And perhaps some relationship that you seem to have with him. Some unique, special relationship. Don't remember what the law says. And that's tightening the screw on the king because, remember, he has just spent a whole day trying to find some clause, some extra clause, some extra clause, some fine print somewhere that others may not have seen, that may in fact finally become the loophole that would cause him to let Daniel go scot-free. The day has been spent. He has labored, as we are told in verse 14, until the sun went down. And there was still no solution to this. And so, clearly, they are saying, look, you better sign the papers. Let's be law-abiding citizens and rulers. I might be sitting there wondering, how can this happen today when our laws don't have such useless connections as we have here? Why should I, a law-abiding believer, and our constitution tends to wrap itself around the scriptures, the law of God in the Old Testament, why should I ever find myself in this? Friends, there are many examples that I can give. Many. Let me give one which is fairly common in boardrooms. And it is called collective responsibility. If you don't know what that animal is, God bless you. But often what happens is big people make decisions in boardrooms. And they make decisions that affect entire companies, that affect employees. And you can be there as a Christian and you disagree with them. But then they vote and the decision is passed. And guess what? You have to go out of that boardroom and make a public pronouncement that this is what the company has decided. Collective responsibility demands that you don't say, except me. I didn't agree with what was said inside there. In fact, sometimes they even make sure that all of you are standing or sitting in front of the camera as they are now reading out the decision. And it can be quite embarrassing that you should be sitting there and the company has made some decision that you know, morally speaking, is questionable. But collective responsibility demands that you either resign your job, resign from the board altogether, or you stand there looking like even you were saying it should happen. And of course, what tends to happen is soon after that, I mean, people have seen you on TV where perhaps you've passed some decision that maybe condoms should be put in all company cars or whatever, you know, and you sort of you were sitting there or standing, and then you come to church. Of course, the believers are saying, "What's happened? Eh? How could you?" You are supposed to be collective responsibility. Now, especially in this particular case, if you can apply it, when other people's jobs are affected, individuals lose their job. Simply because what you've had to do, Because people wanted to get rid of somebody was to, as it were, restructure the company so that a certain job is no longer necessary, and therefore Brother so-and-so, Sister so-and-so has lost his job, and then a year or two later, restructuring, and the job pops in again. What I'm trying to say, brethren, is this. That this world is not a playground. This world is the bloody spiritual battleground. Be warned about it. That even the law can be used in order to make you suffer. Not because you've done anything wrong, but because people want to make you suffer. They can even go to the law in order to get away with what they want. These men were not law-abiding men. No. They're pretending to be now that they really want to uphold the law, to uphold the law, when really what they wanted was Daniel dead. And you can find yourself in that situation on either King Darius' side or Daniel's side, where the law is being used in order for people to achieve their pocket agendas. And what happens then? It is that those who may not want you to suffer may in fact be the ones to finally sign on the dotted line. This was hard for Daniel, but that's exactly what happened here. King Darius cast Daniel into the lion's den reluctantly. Verse 16 and verse 17. Then the king commanded. Notice who made the command. It was the king. And Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, and he wasn't saying this with tongue in cheek. He meant what he was saying, and I'll come to it in a moment. May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you. And a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet, and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. In other words, his future, if he has any at all, is set. He's done. The king knew Daniel's innocence. He knew. In fact, later on, as we shall go on to see next week, he knew that these were the people that had acted maliciously, and he got rid of them. But as I said earlier on, let's not rush there. At the moment, all we are saying is that he knew that Daniel was innocent, and so he wishes him well when he faces the painful future. The king stands here and basically in saying, may your God whom you serve continually deliver you, he is acknowledging that the God of Daniel is the sovereign God. He's acknowledging it. In fact, later on, he will acknowledge that to all the people, not simply to Daniel. But he's basically saying, your God has the power to undo what I'm about to do. He's got the power. If he so wishes, he's got the power. And then by saying, whom you serve continually, he is acknowledging the relationship, the peculiar relationship that Daniel has with this God. And he is saying, your God is faithful. Your God is faithful. May he act according to his covenant. You are his servant. There's something of this. The king is by no means a true worshipper of Jehovah. But there's something about Daniel's life that has already been sending these messages to the king. Indeed, something that he may have known from the days of his father, something that he may have known from the history of the kingdom concerning this Daniel and his friends. And so as a result of that, he is basically saying, may God act as he has done before. Again, I want us to recognize that this man spent a bit of time with Daniel, whether it was in private or among other counselors, we don't know, but the king spent time with Daniel and wished him well. And then did what? Signed his death warrant. That's going to happen. That's going to happen to you. That those who mean well will be the very ones used to finally make you suffer. And it is often at this point that most of the pain comes in. Most of the pain comes in. Because from your angle, as a person who's about to be, as it were, thrown out into the lion's den, as an individual who's about to suffer, you sort of ask the question, but how could you? Why didn't you stop it? Let's go back to the sort of boardroom or management situation, because often that's where things like this happen. And let's imagine it's a believer who's part of top management. And you receive the letter firing you. And it's his signature. And you remember that last Sunday, you were worshipping together. He was sitting next to you. You see the kind of questions you'll be having. Huh? I mean, the first thing you do is to go to his home, isn't it, and say, look, how? And you call yourself a Christian, or my brother in the Lord, or something. How? That's where the pain comes in. It is in recognizing that surely this person is not supposed to have any malice against me. That should be a thought far from my mind. How then does he put his signature there? Now we all think from our angle, don't we? In other words, from where Daniel is, I know that's not going to happen in your thinking, but I'll bring it to the present day. From where Daniel is sitting, he ought to be saying to the king, but king, look, you like your life, I like mine too. You know I haven't done anything wrong. You know. So why didn't you just say, no, I won't sign? Come, let fire me. I'm not signing. Why? Why go ahead and assign me to lions when you know very well I'm innocent. And then you are now even saying to me at God, may God deliver you. Okay, now, there's no king involved here. I doubt that there will be a king involved in your life. But all I'm saying is, these are the kind of questions that you're likely to ask the one that has been used in this way. You'll probably be saying something like this: look, you knew this was coming up. Why didn't you tell me? You knew, because in management, you discuss these things. You knew. Why didn't you tell me? But obviously the person knows, if he had told you, you were then going to go to those same people and say, I know what you're about to do. I know. I'm well connected in this company. Well connected. And of course they would know who would have whispered to you. After all, you sit together in church. So you still ask those painful questions, because from your side, from where you are sitting, surely if I'm going to be sacrificed and you say that you know realities here, you know the truth, you know I'm honestly innocent here, you should have been willing to sacrifice your job in order to save my backside. We don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us anything about Daniel's response here. In fact, sometimes when we read passages like this, we miss the chemistry of what would have been happening. We miss it. Because we almost sort of imagine Daniel just standing like this. And the king says everything. And majestically goes into the lion's den. They open. Goes in there. And just stands among the lions. Don't we? Those are the kind of thoughts that go through our minds when we read passages like this. Some super heroic spiritual Daniel. Eh? First cousin to Angel Gabriel. Definitely not one of us. But let's remember that these accounts have been given for our instruction, for our encouragement. Let's remember that. Because as Daniel walked with God on earth, we walk with God on earth. And all we need to do is remove Daniel and put ourselves there. God remains the same. And we simply have to close the circumstances with 21st century. And believe you me, these things begin to happen. And one day, you will be sitting with a letter in front of you that says, go home. Signed by your brother or sister in the Lord. And you'll be feeling very betrayed as you are now there with lions growling at you. Growling at you. Or maybe you're already there. You are with perplexing questions going through your mind right now. Perplexing questions. The answer I'd like to give you now is this: life is not a straight line. It's not. The same statement that King Darius makes here is that which we need to embrace in terms of the background belief system that gives birth to it. And it is this: God has not been taken by surprise. God has not been biting his nails, wondering how to rescue Daniel. He is king. He's king over all kings, Lord over all lords. He knows what he is doing when he allows you to be thrown into the den of lions. He knows what he is doing. And yes, he may rescue you so that your final story is better than the beginning. Or he may want to use that opportunity to graduate you to glory. He may. He's sovereign. He's sovereign. He's sovereign. And then also that he is a God who is faithful. He has not abandoned his covenant with his people. He has it. Don't let the frowning providence put such a dark cloud over this reality that you begin to think that because you have landed where the enemies of your soul wanted you to land, that therefore God has abandoned you as well. He hasn't. He remains faithful. It's just that life is not a straight line graph. It's not. God, in his inscrutable wisdom, knows what he is doing. And yes, we'll come and discover that with Daniel. But as I said, let's not rush there. The last thing I want us to notice is the trouble that those who mean well for us go through behind the scenes. We are not there to see it. If they were to tell us, we probably would be very angry with them, thinking that they are just adding salt to injury. Verse 18. And we end there for this evening. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No divisions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. Daniel had no idea, absolute no idea, that the king was failing to eat. That the king was refusing to do his work. Refusing. He's got an entire kingdom to look after, and he's saying, no. Give me a break, guys. Give me a break. And that even the most comfortable bed in the kingdom felt as if it had thorns and thistles for the king. He couldn't sleep. He couldn't sleep. I think there are two possible reasons. First of all, it was sympathy for Daniel. Daniel was King Darius's most reliable worker. Most reliable. And because of that, he had grown fond of him. And now, he is thrown into a den of lions. But secondly, it could have also been self-condemnation. I signed that paper. I commanded an innocent soul to suffer because of other people's cleverness. And for all I know, Daniel is nothing but bones right now. Nothing but bones. How do you sleep? How do you sleep? When your hands are now red with the blood of the innocent, how do you sleep? Oh, may his God rescue him. And as we know, early the following morning, he rushed there. The point I want to mention here is Daniel did not know these details. All that Daniel knew was that he was facing a few hungry lions. Thrown there by King Darius. Isn't that what happens, brethren? In your suffering, you think that everyone else is just enjoying sleep, isn't it? Everyone else is just enjoying sleep. Including those who inadvertently would have caused what you are now going through. All because we see life purely from our perspective. And if such an individual was to come to you and say, you know what, I'm really sorry, I don't know whether I'll sleep tonight because of... Hey, come on, get out of here! If you're really sorry, why didn't you stop this thing from happening? You know, So in the end, it cannot be said to you. But I want you to know that if you serve God faithfully, human beings have consciences. They do. They have consciences. And especially those who did not themselves participate out of malice. They have consciences. And those consciences are what bring about the sense of sympathy and bring about the sense of self-condemnation. Frankly, I'm not sure who suffered the most that night between Daniel and Darius. I think we can toss a coin here. Think about it. Both of them did not sleep that night. I think the only ones who slept and probably drank with wine were those individuals that came up with this situation. They're the ones who tossed a lot of wine that night, danced around, hooray, done! Daniel, gone! Drank themselves into a stupor and were blacked out until the following day. The king didn't sleep. Daniel didn't sleep. Brethren, here's where I want us to pause today. Because this is where life lasts the longest for most of us. This is where relationships by the innocent are easily destroyed. Because those who themselves are the true conspirators are not there. But we tend to concentrate on the one whose signature is on the paper. We need to have a biblical appreciation of this fact. God is sovereign. And God is faithful. Human beings are but means. That's all they are. Means. Some of them maliciously, yes, but simply means. Others innocent, yes, and again, it's means. The one who ultimately is in charge of all things is God. And God will sometimes allow our enemies to temporarily triumph. Because he's got another end in view that we cannot see. God will even use our true friends, genuine believers, brothers and sisters, who themselves wish us the best. Because in that moment they realize they have no choice. Others have played the cards right. But they too must have God to deal with. They've also got God to deal with. While we have God to deal with, that's the reality on earth. Here's where I want to end. Jesus himself, our Savior, the one to whom we need to go to and cry, is one who suffered malice from the inner circle. He who dips his bread with me is the one who betrays me. Wow. And in his case, maliciously. Can I go further? The very Jesus that we cry to in our darkest moment is one whose own disciple denies him 3 times when he needs him to stand with him. And what does Jesus say afterwards? When he sends the ladies to take the good news to the disciples, he says, go and tell my disciples and Peter that I have risen from the dead. Go tell them. As though to say, if you don't include Peter, you probably conclude, obviously the Lord doesn't want to see me at all. After all, he saw that I was refusing to have known him. But the Lord fixed his eyes on the Father. This is the Father's will. He has given me this cup to drink from. It is his will. He is the one who has delivered me over into the hands of Pilate and finally onto the cross. It is God. Brethren, he's our example, and he is the one we need to keep crying to when such times come. May I close by saying, if you are not there yet, or something like this is not in your past, take this, roll it, and keep it in your pocket. Somewhere in the years ahead, you will be thrown into the lion's den. Faces will be passing by your mind, the screen of your mind. And some of those people, you'll be asking the question, how can you do this? How? And may God help you to remember that you don't know everything. You don't. God knows. And God has allowed it. Worship him. Worship him. When you get to heaven, you will know everything. In heaven. Until then, trust him. Trust him. He knows what he is doing.
Amen.